This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Hey, listeners. My name is Vanessa, the host of the Unseminary Podcast, where we talk about the stuff you wish they taught in seminary. I'm joined by the founder of Unseminary, Rich Birch. Hey, Rich, how are you?
Hey, Vanessa, I'm doing great. I'm doing really well today. Actually, it's spring has sprung in our part of the world, which is nice. And
finally,
summer's on its way, which is wonderful. So here we are heading through May, which is a great month. So, but today, I think I've got the biggest number of points that I've ever had on a post, which is 21 easy ways for your church to be more first-time guest friendly. So that's what we're talking about today.
I feel like we're going to scare our listeners that 21 easy ways, are they like, oh no, it's going to be an hour long.
Yeah, no, we'll still try to keep it quick. But you know, the this really comes out of, we were just talking before we started recording, I've done more kind of coaching this winter and spring, which has been great. Been out at a number of churches, and I love going to a church for the first time, you know, particularly as a coach, because it's interesting because you do see things differently. You know, there's this idea of being nose blind that most organizations, they can't see what's in front of them. And so what I've tried to do here is put together 21 things that I think every church, you know, should be thinking about if they want to be, which I think every church is, wants to be first time guest friendly.
You're like a secret shopper. Churches should hire you as their secret shopper.
There's guys out there that do that, actually. The thing I prefer to be walk side by side with, like an executive pastor or somebody else, rather than be by myself, because I find that the interaction is so great. And you know, you can pick up on things, and I think it's more helpful for them rather than just being completely secret. But actually, funny you say that, because I was at a church earlier this spring, a church called Stonebridge Church in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha. Omaha's a great, great city. It's amazing. I love it. But we had come out of the first service and we were going to another campus. We came out of the service. The guy I was with, the kind of executive pastor dude, a great leader. We jump in the car and, he's never left a service at that time. And there's a giant line of people trying to leave the parking lot. And it was amazing. Cause he said, Mitch is his name. Mitch was like, I've never seen this before. I guess we do need a parking team. And I'm like, yes. So today, these points are similar kind of things. Hopefully, they're things that will help you as you think about how do you make your church more first-time guest-friendly.
All right. Awesome. So let's kick this off with our first point. Don't be weird.
Okay. Yes. I wanted to start kind of philosophically. Sometimes we can do things at churches that are just strange, like just bizarre. And, you know, I love that Babylon Bee kind of humor blog that's out there that is making fun of the church world. And a lot of all their, you know, poking fun at is just kind of the weird idiosyncrasies. You know, people come into our churches, it's unfamiliar territory. They've never been before. They wonder what it's going to be like. Guests arrive at your church looking for people like them. They aren't looking for people who are weird and strange. So the first thing is to kind of have your weirdometer up, looking for things that aren't weird.
Kills me. That's a great point. All right. So a clear website. Oh, this is a good one.
All right. So somewhere around 50% of your first time or visitors, which is surprising that it's not higher than that. But the most recent stats I could find, and they're a few years old, say about 50% of new visitors to your church will first visit your website before they arrive. And you would not believe how many churches, their websites aren't that clear. It's like they're designed to be like a form place where people fill out things to get participate in the church. And they're not great from a first time guest point of view. So there needs to be easy to access addresses and service times. They need to have access to past messages. People do that. If you look at your statistics, usually that is, if you're not offering messages on your site, you should be doing that, because the churches that do that, that's a huge reason why people arrive on their site. Information on the kids ministry, a sense of what is important to the church. You know, an interesting thing you should do too, giving you a little insider tip here, Vanessa, is open up a browser and go on Google and type the kinds of things that you think people will be searching. So churches in Omaha, or, you know, churches in, you know, Nebraska, or churches in, you know, Tampa, wherever you are. And if your church isn't showing up on the first page, that's a significant problem. And it's even, you know, you need to be working harder to get it even higher up in the listing. This isn't a thing on SEO, but, you know, that needs to be, people need to find you online. So clear website.
What to expect content on social media. This is a great point. And if you're not using social media, you should start with this.
Yeah. So I think that really one of the highest uses that all churches should be doing on social media, like I always try to think, how do I reduce this and make this easy? Because there's still churches out there who don't use Facebook, Instagram, or whatever platform they're, you know, interested in. Really think of it as a what to expect content, like photos of what's going on in your services, not just the like what's on stage, but like what's it like when you arrive? What's it like in the kids ministry? What's it like, you know, even in the parking lot, that sort of thing. Road to Life Church, who we've mentioned in the past in Northwest Indiana, they do these really cool videos every Sunday where it's a kind of a summary video of what happened. They're high energy. They're like a minute and 30 seconds, but they're so fun. Great to kind of, and when you watch it, you're like, wow, that looks like a great church. Looks like the kind of place I'd love to go to.
I think this next point is something that you definitely want to put some money towards and invest in signage at the road.
Yeah. So when people drive up to your church, if you've ever gone anywhere new, there is that moment where, like a lot of people, yes, we put it in the GPS, but you're driving down the road and the GPS says like, it's up there on 400 feet. And then you're like, where is it? Where is it? I don't see it. And so I don't think you can have too much signage at the road. You know, most, you know, the kind of rule of thumb I've said in other environments is to check with your town on what the bylaw limits are for temporary signage and do all of that. So find out what the kind of the maximum amount that they'll allow you to do and do all of that. So that's flags, sandwich boards, whatever you can at the road. And what you're trying to do is reduce that last second tension that people feel where they're like, am I in the right place? Most people will, you know, they'll use GPS to find you, but then there's that last second like, oh, is this the right place? You don't want to look hidden.
I think we're in a generation too where there's a lot of multi-site churches that are not in your stereotypical church. And it's so scary when, I mean, this happens to me all the time. It just happened to me last night. I was driving somewhere and I had it in my GPS, had no idea where I was going, and I missed my turn.
Oh no.
And I had to loop all the way back. It was brutal, but it was fine because I was alone. But it's still nerve-wracking if you don't know where you're going, right?
Well,
so it's great.
I think there's a thing too around because we're so dependent on GPS that actually we're less aware of what's around us. And so the stuff's got to stick out more because we're just like, I don't really pay attention where I drive anymore. I just wait for, you know, the Google Maps to tell me when to turn. And so then that becomes a little bit of a problem because then at the end, when you actually get there, they just say, well, there it is. And you know, you got to figure it out from there. So yeah, that's cool.
For sure. So signage at the doors, sticking with this signage.
Yeah. So I think when you approach a building, a church building, you know, again, architects, love architects, they'll do a great job, but they think that like, well, it just makes sense. This door is at the front of the building. And so that's where everyone should go in. What I'd want you to do is, you know, sometime later this week when you leave church, just walk around the outside of your building and count how many doors are on the outside of your building. There are a lot. And if it's not super clear, over obviously clear how, which doors to go in, then you need more signage. So, you know, and particularly, you know, if you've got to nuance this, if you've got a door that's like easier, if you've got kids to come in, make that obvious. So like, don't make single moms walk too far. If this is the great way for you to come into your kids' environments, put that on the outside so people can see it.
Yeah, we've gone to a couple of churches that have kids' environment doors, and it's so handy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah, definitely.
This is one that grinds my gears, is having a cluttered lobby. Declutter it. Oh, it's so frustrating when you can't move.
Yeah, it's so bad. So actually, this one, I think, again, giving you some low-hanging fruit. One of the things when I visit a church, I can almost guarantee that I can find clutter in the lobby because you literally don't see it. Most leaders don't see it. There are, you know, we happen to go to a church that's led by Carrie Newhoff, who is like Mr. Neat Freak. And so that has trickled down for the most part in our church. But a lot of churches you walk into and there's just stuff, you know, church lobbies seem to be a magnet for stuff over time. And we need to intentionally remove visual and spatial noise on a regular basis. And so this should be on somebody's checklist every week. Walk around and find, you know, stuff to get rid of. Put stuff away. Put it away. You know, put it in a closet. Throw it out. When in doubt, throw it out. You know, airports are a good benchmark for this. Next time you're flying, look around. Actually, there you'd be amazed at how little there is in the kind of the business side of the like actual arriving, you know, getting to your gate, all that kind of stuff. They do a good job cleaning it up, partly from a security point of view, but also just from a knowing where to go. So yeah, fantastic. Declutter those lobbies.
Clear wayfinding signage inside the doors is our next point.
Okay, so again, this is a part of a little bit of a jab on architects. Architects think that buildings are intuitive. They stare at documents from above and look at drawings from above, and they're like, it's obvious, you walk in here. And they'll say stuff like, you know, the carpet in here has lines going all in this direction, and therefore people will all know that that's the direction to go. That's just not true. So, you know, you need to push to have more signage. You know, usually when you open up a building, so, yeah, again, some architect will make some really small, nice, discreet signs. There needs to be a lot more. The four questions I'm always looking for when I walk into a building are, I should know the second I walk in the door, where do I drop off my kids? Where can I get a cup of coffee? Where are the bathrooms? And where is the service happening? You know, all four of those things should be super obvious when I first walk in those doors. You need to do that with signage, you know, throughout your building.
That's a really good radar to have.
Nice.
Especially as a mom who needs coffee and pregnant needs the washroom.
Yes, absolutely. Right. You get the, where do I drop my kids? And then, you know, and it's usually in some sort of order. Like lots of people do those three things, drop their kids off, grab some coffee, go to the bathroom before the service starts.
Totally. First time guest check in at kids ministry.
All right. So we live in an age of helicopter parents, which is just wonderful. That is the reality. You know, most parents, the anxiety that parents have around dropping their kids off in a program like ours is quite high. And that's okay. You know, at your kids check in, a best practice is to make it clear and obvious for first time guests what they should do. And, you know, that this can be nothing more than just literally a sign that says first time guest check in. And you have, a person standing there, or first time guest check in here, that sort of this, that this person should be, whoever is on that should not be busy the entire morning. In fact, a part of what we're getting them to do is to be available. So the moment a first time family arrives, they can jump into action, help that family get plugged into, all the kids' environments, actually walk the families into where, you know, wherever those programs are. So first time guest check-in is super important.
I feel like we could loop even back to like the website.
Yeah.
Is it smart to have like a pre-check-in if you know you're coming to a church for the first time, and have it like a form that you can fill out in advance before you come to the service?
Absolutely.
Is that smart?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of churches are doing that, like a pre-check-in for kids, which is wonderful. Now my caution for you is, if you have that form on your website, you need to make sure that someone is managing that form, that if you, because if you have a form in there and you fill it out and then don't actually do something with that data, and then when the parents arrive, you've now taken what could have been a really positive experience and made it quite negative. So yeah, absolutely. You should be doing that. That's a good best practice. And, but again, you have to push that all the way through to someone's got to man it. Someone's got to get back in touch with those people, you know, send them an email the night before. Hey, we're so glad to see you. When you arrive tomorrow, you should be looking for this sign. You know, here's a picture of that sign, would be even better, or Fred will be on there, or Jan will be on there. They would love to talk with you tomorrow morning. So yeah, that's great. Good call.
That's a good roadblock, I think.
Yeah.
Like just to eliminate that.
Totally. Yeah. And again, I think, like on the security front, and I hope I don't make any kids ministry people mad here, but, the security there is mostly for parents. Actually, it's mostly so parents know that, hey, we're looking after your kids, you know, that we're taking care of them. So they, you know, when we do that stuff, we have to think about it from their perspective. How do we make this feel secure? And how do we do, and the forms ahead of time are a great way to do that, for sure.
For sure. New here kiosk in the lobby.
All right. So when first time guests arrive at your church, it needs to be obvious where they go. You know, a lot of churches, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, but, you know, again, a best practice is when people are new at your church or first time guests, doing some sort of exchange in exchange for contact information is a great kind of beginning of the assimilation process. But you wouldn't believe how many churches you go to, and that's their process. They're like, we're going to give away a t-shirt. But when you arrive in the lobby, it's not clear where people are supposed to go. It's not super obvious. And so, again, I think you want to make that very obvious, something that, you know, whatever language you're used, new here, first time, whatever that is, make a kiosk or an area in your lobby that is dedicated for that. I would move away from just a general information desk to specifically a new here kiosk. Again, we want to reduce the friction on what it's like for those first time guests. So yeah, new here kiosk, absolutely important.
More greeters and ushers.
All right. So your church needs more team members dedicated to ensuring guests can find their way. This, you know, I think sometimes we think this is like human signage. It's like people standing on the doors that are like, come in this way, come in this way. Here is some paper, come in this way. And these people need to see their jobs more than that. They really, what they have to be doing is keeping an eye out for people that have that I'm new here look in their faces. You know, people that are like, well, I'm not sure where to go. And at that moment, there needs to be enough volunteers that they can jump into action and say, hey, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Can I help you today? Or how can I help you? And to be able to do that, that means you need to have a lot of volunteers ready to go. Some churches also designate members of this team to swim the lobby, folks to go around and just try to find, you know, folks and to provide extra care and connection for them. Either way, you can't staff this area with just a minimum number of people. You need to have an excess number of ushers and greeters. Don't think about like, well, we have three doors, therefore we only need three ushers. You need to have a lot more than that, for sure.
I want to push back on this a little bit.
Yes, please do.
Because I think it's great to have lots of ushers and greeters, and their role is super important in making first-time guests feel welcomed and just helping navigate and having conversations with even old members of the church. But I think sometimes it can clutter the lobby too. So I think part of it is strategically placing people as well. Where are the big flows of people coming in, and not to hoard by the coffee station or by the front door where people are trying to leave, you know? Like,
yeah, that's
I think it has to be thought out a little bit more than just placing people. I'm thinking of like, what's that game, like Sim, where you just like drop people?
Oh, yeah. Right. Lemmings. Yeah, where you have a whole bunch of them. Yeah, no, I think that's a good flag. You've got to work strategically so that there's enough, but that they're not, they're definitely not talking to each other, and which does naturally happen with the more team members you have. They actually, ironically, actually can be less guest responsive. And where they're standing is important, and that they're available. And then also, I think there is a training piece where, sometimes, I don't know if you've been somewhere where there's like an overly friendly usher where you're like, oh, this is actually not great. Like this person is doing what we said, which was please be friendly to people. But there's a line, right?
Weird.
Yeah. Of being weird, right? And so we've got to figure out what that line is and train towards it and then move people around to that. And so that's why I think some churches have gone to the kind of a dedicated person who their job is to do the above and beyond service. So most people were saying your job is to be a polite human signage. You would never say that to people, but stand here, hand out these things. This is where you're going. If people ask you questions, that's great. But then folks with higher emotional, quotients, EQs, who seem to just be like ninjas of reading, people, we're going to send them to swim the lobby to find the moms who are, maybe distracted, wondering where to go, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's a good flag. I'll give you that.
Sparkling bathrooms.
Yeah. So I know this one's kind of funny, but I really do think bathrooms are a big deal. I'm convinced that guests make a lot of assumptions about your church based on the bathrooms. Now, it might be subconscious. It may not actually be like at the level of like, this church doesn't have good theology because their bathrooms have rusty things in them, rusty taps. But I do actually think that it's important, particularly I think moms, I don't know, like if you walk in, you're a mom, I'll test my theory on you. You know, if you go somewhere and the bathrooms aren't looking great, what does that say to you? What does that communicate?
That says that I'm probably not coming back.
Right. It's true. Right. And so,
or I'm just judgmental and I think somebody should clean this.
Yes.
But it's true. Like I went to a washroom yesterday and there was no toilet paper. And I was like, come on, like, how is this a thing? It's a restaurant. This should be something that people are looking at hourly. It's really frustrating and you become judgmental and
totally. And I think, you could look at maybe adding an extra pop to the bathroom, one of some of those convenience baskets I think are amazing to have.
Oh, I love those.
Some hand lotion, mouthwash, that kind of thing I think is great. There are those bathrooms you've been into where like maybe it's in a theater or a restaurant. You've literally been wowed. You've really been like, wow, this is an amazing bathroom. Mm-hmm. You should really try to aim to make your bathrooms like that. They should be a great experience, a fantastic deal for your folks.
There's a restaurant that's close to us and their bathroom, every time I go in, I'm like, how is this a thing? Like, how is this in a restaurant? It's insane. They have couches with TVs and you can lounge, and it's honestly like next level insane. Awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's...
You should do that.
Yeah, we're looking for that kind of thing, right? We're looking for a great... I've been joking with a friend of mine, Tim Cool, who runs like a... He's like a kind of church facilities consultant guy, and I keep joking with him. I'm like, listen, you've got to run, or I've said, we'll do it together, run the best church bathrooms in the country contest and have like have people take pictures of them and like, you know, and then develop some guidelines. Because actually, you walk into some church bathrooms like, wow, these are really nice. But then some you walk into, you're like, whoa, this is terrible. So sparkling bathrooms, it's important.
Team members and t-shirts.
All right. So I know we've talked about this before, but t-shirts are a big deal. You know, to be a part of a team means you get a, I was about to say costume. It's a uniform. so you could tell that I was a drama major in high school, not in, you know, all that other stuff. But t-shirts are a big deal. You know, the reason why t-shirts are for a couple reasons. T-shirts make your team stand out, and which is important for folks when they're first, they arrive, they're disoriented, they're not sure. When they see a bunch of people all in the same color t-shirts, they're like, oh, that must be a person I can go and talk to. I know that your team will resist wearing t-shirts, but you've got to push through that and keep casting vision to them on why it's important, why it's important. It's not about them. It's about our guests. And, you know, the other just kind of tip there, these t-shirts, really, the goal isn't that people will ever wear this t-shirt in any other environment. It's not like you're giving them a t-shirt that like, ooh, I know they're going to go to dinner in this t-shirt. No, that's not it. Actually, you want a t-shirt that stands out. You want bold colors. You want like our, you know, one of our corporate brand colors is orange. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are not wearing that orange t-shirt anywhere but at church. And that's okay. It sticks out, which is what kind of what you want. So you don't want the like white t-shirt, black t-shirt, that kind of thing that doesn't, that just kind of mixes into the crowd. You want something that grabs people's attention.
Put away the backstage stuff.
Yeah, when guests, you know, when you have guests over to your home, you know, you tidy up and put stuff away. You close the garage door because nobody wants to see lawnmower and fertilizer when they arrive. You know, in our house, we put away the blender. We have this blender that sits on our counter all the time. But when people come over to our house, we put that away. It's not like it looks that bad, but you don't actually need it out. It just kind of is visual distraction. It's similar to the clutter thing we talked about before. But particularly, I think this is important in a local church because, you know, there may be, you know, a utility closet that stays open, or people might look backstage. Like I often think those, when you walk into a church auditorium, oftentimes there's like the sound booth right there. And those sound booths can be like a dumping ground for all kinds of like extra microphones and all that kind of stuff. Just put all that away. Put that in a closet somewhere where people don't need to see it. Again, it's kind of like the clutter point earlier, but it's particularly items that are not being used now that are, you know, maybe more for the support of the church.
Calming people in kids ministry area.
All right. So kids ministry can be high energy and exciting aspect of the church. In fact, it should be. It should be the kind of place you walk into and are like, wow, this is great. But you know, and I know that there are some people who by definition, they kind of like ratchet up the pressure. They're, you know, they're not actually a calm, still voice. And so if something goes wrong, if it's like there's a problem with a computer in one room or there's like, you know, some issue in some other area, they actually have a way of exuding stress. And so I think an important aspect of our kids ministry is actually having people who are actually a calming voice that actually can maybe roam the halls or be a team leader in that area to ensure that it's kind of reducing the pressure. It's reducing the, you know, the stress that might happen in that room.
Unassuming worship leaders.
All right. So worship leaders, I did a post on Carrie Newhoff's blog recently. He had asked me, which I was really privileged that he asked me to guest post on there, which was great. And I did a whole post, which maybe we'll link to in this article. You know, it was like, I think 7 things that senior pastors wish that they could say to worship leaders. And, you know, one of them is this, like, I think worship leaders, we can assume too much that people either know the music we're singing. They are like, I've heard so many worship guys over the years say like, man, did you hear the new Bethel song? And like, the answer is no, I have not heard the new Bethel song. Like the only people that listen to worship music are worship leaders. No one else does. I know that's a harsh statement, but it's kind of true. And so you can't assume.
I'd say that's partially accurate.
Exactly. You can't assume that anyone has heard anything that you're going to sing. And so you've got to go out of your way. You know, really at the end of the day, it's about engaging those guys. And it's typically guys who are standing in the back row, sipping coffee. How do we get those people to engage? Not the people who are sitting in the front row who love your music. It's actually the people at the back of the room. So it's careful song selection, thoughtful verbal transitions, you know, and a desire to constantly improve and kind of connect people. So unassuming worship leaders, important.
I'm now curious, and maybe our listeners are too. What do you listen to when you drive? Don't say podcasts either. That's a cop out. What music do you listen to?
You know what? I mostly listen to spoken words. So podcasts or audiobooks is what I listen to most of the time. Now, I will, I do have a playlist on my phone called Guilty Pleasure. And so that has things like, and this, I can't believe I'm going to admit this on the air. That has things like Katy Perry. Britney Spears.
No.
All that like really bubbly pop music. Like ridiculously bubbly. I have been known to listen to that from time to time. Again, either I can hear the people unsubscribing as we talk. So
this is so good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. My Hunter makes fun of it. My son, he's like into jazz music and all this stuff. He's into like, he has very sophisticated music taste, like way more sophisticated than I ever had. And he, but he,
obviously.
And I, he and I share the same like iTunes account. And so whenever I get music, I don't know, our phones are set. Whenever he gets music, his music goes on my phone. And whenever I get music, it goes on his phone. And so he gets so offended. He's like, Dad, I do not want the latest Taylor Swift, you know, or whatever is going on. So.
Oh, this is so.
So there it is.
That made my day.
Nice. Good stuff.
I would have, honestly, I don't know if other people thought this, but I would have taken you for more of like a classic rock kind of guy.
Well, I do. Not really. Like, I do like U2. I do like, but yeah, I don't really listen to music on my head, on my phone. I will around the house. We'll put on like, I sometimes actually do like jazz, smooth jazz, that kind of thing, just playing in the house, which is kind of nice. But yeah, I'm not, that's my music. Nice.
All right. Jargon free service.
All right. So, language at our churches can be littered with all kinds of confusing jargon, as I said, by definition is a subtle social tool used by groups to define boundaries. And so that's what jargon does. It literally says, I'm going to say things that only people in my group know. And so we've got to work hard over time to reduce jargon. And, you know, you need like jargon police at your church that are going to, you know, and you know, some of it is, it's just weird and creepy and strange. But then a lot of it is just like, just hard to understand. Like, you know, the Lord is working in my heart, or, you know, during my quiet time, or that person was a lost sheep straying from the fold, or, you know, today we're going to have a time of communion and fellowship, or you might talk about a hedge of protection, that kind of language. To people who, let alone like unchurched people, even folks that aren't from your, if they're Christians or Christ followers and they're coming from a different stream of Christianity, they don't understand that language. That language doesn't make any sense to them. And so jargon-free, super important. You know, again, you've got to work that out of your system. It's there. I guarantee you this weekend at your church, you're going to have jargon. Every church has it. You've got to find a way to kind of root it out on a regular basis.
Clear acknowledgement of guests from the stage.
All right. So important thing to raise the flag and let people know we are glad you're here. Go back to the example of people visiting your house. Can you imagine how weird it would be if at Thanksgiving dinner you had a large, let's say you had 20 people at your dinner, and in that 20, there were three or four people who had never been to Thanksgiving dinner at your house before. Now, if you didn't acknowledge those people, like literally they came into your house, they sat at your meal table, they had dinner, and no one ever acknowledged them. The host never said like, hey, we're so glad you're here. How weird would that? The flip side of that, I go, my wife's family has an annual Christmas dinner. Her uncle and aunt throw it, and it started with just their family, but over years it's grown. Now there's like 50 or 60 people at it. And every year, actually one of the classiest things her uncle does is he gets up and he actually welcomes people who have never been before. And it's like super cool. Like, it's like, that's a really nice thing. He calls them out, tells why they're there, kind of a little bit about them, that kind of thing. The same thing is true, you know, when guests arrive at our church. If we know that there's guests at your church, every church that, you know, even if you're a church of 25 people, there's someone there this weekend who hasn't been there before. So going out of your way, not to say, please raise your hand, not to say, please stand up, that kind of thing, but just calling out, hey, if you're here for the first time, we're so glad you're here. Thank you for visiting. And, you know, whatever your kind of next step is.
Invitation to a clear next step.
Well, it looks like I was on a mental roll here as I was writing this. So yeah, I think easy thing to do for first time guests is to make a clear next step for them. What is it that you're asking them to do? You know, fill out this card, take it to the lobby, go to the new here kiosk, and you will get a t-shirt in your size. You cannot make it too simple. You've got to make it very straightforward. Don't make it confusing. Make it clear and obvious, simple, and actually over time, figure out how to make it more clear, more obvious. If you look at fast-growing churches, one of the common things you see among them is that step, they have made it blatantly obvious what to do. They're not hiding that at all.
We sort of touched on this earlier, but parking lot team.
Yeah, so parking lot team, we talked about that on the top end. You know, I think churches, again, parking lots can be a confusing place for people who have never been to them before. And there is anxiety around, am I in the right place? And so having people out in the parking lot, like at our church, you know, I love our parking lot guys. They're that appropriate level of excitement. Hey, so glad you're here. Thanks for coming. You know, they actually look happy to be out there. They're not like, oh, I'm so bored. Why am I here? They're, you know, glad to be there. And we also know how important first and last impressions are on people. And so I would say parking lot team after your service as well. A number of churches have parking lot teams on the entrance, but they don't have people helping leave the service. And so there can be a missing spot there.
Faster and friendlier follow-up.
Okay, so many churches ask, and we've talked about this a couple times today, ask guests to fill out some sort of contact information as a way, you know, as a kind of start the follow-up process. Now, I am convinced that more so now than ever before, people know when they fill out a card like that, they know they're giving us their contact information. People are blatantly aware that that is happening. If we don't follow up with them quickly and friendlily, you know, we're not meeting their expectation. And so, you know, the push here for you is, you know, I think you, the faster and the more friendly you can do that. So if you're normally your system says, you know, you're going to email them on Tuesday, I'd ask the question, you know, is there any way to set that up to do that on Sunday night? Is there any way to do that? Or, you know, if it's always mechanical, is there a way to kind of step it up one through phone calls or handwritten notes rather than email? What can you do to make that experience faster and friendlier than it is today?
Rich, we've made it to our 21st.
21!
Yes, our last point, a compelling reason to come back next week, which is a good one to finish off on.
Yeah, so I think overall, you know, years ago, I remember someone who is much wiser than me said, you know, the kind of greatest thing we can do for guests, the greatest thing that we can, through all of this stuff, is to actually just give them a reason to come back, that something happened or something was communicated that tweaked their interest enough to say, hey, I should come back next week. Somebody said in the message, they gave kind of a foreshadow to, you know, what the next part of the series is going to be, or, you know, the kids' environment has something new starting next Sunday. Looking for what are those deliberate kind of hooks in the water to say, hey, you should come back next week because we've got some great stuff going on. Really, I think is the highest form. If you only do one thing on this list, this is actually probably it, to be, you know, clear with them on why you want them to come back next week.
Rich, since that's our last point, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate people listening in all the way through this. And, you know, if people are interested, I I do visit churches and help. I'm happy to do that. You can reach out, just email me, rich@unseminary.com. I'm really booked all through the summer, but I do have some space available in the fall if you're interested. Would love to talk.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can see the full article and all of our other podcasts at unseminary.com.